I am crazy, just like you. I am crazy, just like you.
Welcome to Beautiful Minds Radio at CFRO 102.7 FM. Destigmatizing mental illness. I'm Richard J. Dalton Jr. Tonight, Dr. Chris Gorman and Beautiful Minds social media guru Dana Gillis will discuss dissociation as the condition of the day. We will also be interviewing Kair on dissociative identity disorder, most commonly known as multiple personality disorder. For our personal story, we welcome Tatiana Tomaselli, an accomplished businesswoman, single mom, and an inspiration to people who live with a mental health issue. She speaks to us today about successful management of her mental health. Let's have a listen to L'Hiver à Cesse by Gerard Sotamian.
This is Dr. Chris Gorman, and we're talking about the condition. And again, we can only handle one day at a time. Richard keeps trying to get us to have a condition of the week, but we really, it's too far-reaching for the resources of our program. I've got Dana Gillis with me today. He's standing in for Brendan Beiser, and we're going to talk about dissociation. So what's the first thing that springs to your mind, Dana, when I say dissociation?
Well, I can only speak from experience, and Dr. Gorman, if you don't mind me conveying my experience, you know, from a very young age, because I experienced some trauma as a youngster, and from a very young age, it just seemed like there were times when I was being sucked out through my ears and being deposited somewhere far, far away from my person where I didn't really know how to get back. That's been my experience.
Well, that's exactly it. Now, that's a great description. It's essentially, there's a variation in the experience of dissociation. Now, let me just briefly describe what it is. It's a detachment from your immediate surroundings, which, you know, can be like daydreaming almost. I mean, that would be dissociating in a mild way, all the way to a severe detachment with both a change in both your physical and emotional reality. So it's there's still some awareness that you're in the real world, but there's, you're operating in it as if you're in a different place. So it can be like almost like you think the world has taken on a dreamlike quality, or you've taken on a dreamlike quality. And I just wondered, does that sound accurate to you, Dana?
Oh yeah, well, it absolutely does. It very much is a dreamlike quality, and within that dream state, for lack of a better term, I feel very vulnerable. Like anything could happen to me. Although it's rare that I remember it being so negative that I came out of it in a cold sweat or anything like that. But I am really, to this very day, at this ripe old age of 50, I'm still scared as hell sometimes when I'm there.
Yeah, well, you raise an important point. It's about anxiety. One of the big ideas is it's a defense mechanism, and defense mechanisms are these unconscious processes that protect us from either a painful reality or a reminder of a painful reality. And that's why it's often, there's a past history of trauma of some sort, and then these dissociative phenomena can arise during what's called triggers, I guess, is probably the best.
Right. Triggers are funny because I can't really point to one in particular trigger. You know, if I'm sitting at my computer at home listening to CBC, and I'm sorry, CFRO, and
CBC?
Yeah, I know. Maybe it's the CBC that triggers me. I'm not sure. They've been playing a lot of reruns lately.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but I can, not to make too light of it, I can go from that very present state into this other place and not really knowing what the trigger was. And I must also say that this is a physiological thing, Dr. Gorman, as well. I mean,
it's a very physical thing. I mean, that what's noted in people that dissociate is that their physiology changes, their skin conductance, which is a measure of stress, changes, their heart rate changes, their pattern of breathing can change. All those things change. And you know, another example of it is people that are in a very odd surrounding. Maybe they've had no trauma in their life, but they're walking in a marketplace in Marrakesh, and it'll take on a dreamlike quality. And if you ask the person, were you anxious at the time, the answer is usually no. It's often just this dreamlike state that they experience.
Well, that's, you know, I wish that was the case. It began with me when I was very young, and I went through that period in my younger years thinking this was normal for everybody. It wasn't until I got older that I realized it was wrong, that I was wrong about that. Mm-hmm. And that mainly happened because of experiencing this during meetings or something.
And, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you raise a good point. It is normal. And it's abnormal. It's just an extension of the severity of something like all of the mental health conditions. But we should probably close out and get back to the rest of the radio show. I know that's disappointing for most of our listeners in terms of us having to leave, but they'll just have to wait until we get back on the show later on. Thank you and good night.
That was My by Gerard Satamian. Earlier, that was psychiatrist Dr. Chris Gorman and his occasional sidekick, Dana Gillis, talking about dissociation. You're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio, destigmatizing mental illness, on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr.
My life is brilliant. My life is brilliant. You're beautiful, you're beautiful, you're beautiful, it's true. My life is brilliant, my life is brilliant, my life is brilliant.
In the studio, we have Kyaire Weber talking about her experience with multiple personality disorder. She's a public speaker and writer for Dissociative Identity Disorder Advocacy and facilitates a weekly support group for people with mental health issues. She also blogs about her experiences with dissociative identity disorder and dispels common myths. Welcome to Beautiful Minds, Kyaire.
Thank you, Richard.
So tell me, when did you first have symptoms of multiple personality disorder?
Well, the thing with multiple personality is the symptoms, the multiplexity is what I like to call it, really starts at a very young age. Usually the child has to be younger than about 7 in order to have multiple personality, in order to be able to create different personalities within. So I started, I think that I actually started when I was under a year old, but I have no way of validating that. But I know for sure that around age 3, I started to dissociate and dissociate to the extent where I began to create different personalities in a response to trauma that I was undergoing.
So what was the trauma that you went through?
I was abused, mostly sexual abuse, and always along with sexual abuse. I mean, it's really physical abuse as well as emotional and psychological abuse and verbal abuse as well. So kind of all kinds of abuse.
Okay. And how many personalities do you have?
Well, right now I only have 28, but originally I had 184. But I went through a process this past year, what's called integration, where a number of the personalities kind of blend together and become one personality. And it's often a process that many multiples will go through as part of their healing process or just because that's a choice that they want to make, is because it's less complicated, really, to be one person.
And does each personality have a name?
For me, they do. And I know for many multiples, they do. And I think there are many multiples who don't name the different personalities. But for me, every one of my personalities has names.
And do some of them get grouped together into one sort of group because they have commonalities?
Yeah. And sometimes because they're dealing with one situation, but as a way of splitting up and dissociating from the situation and fragmenting it into the smallest parts that make it more bearable to get through whatever the trauma is. So for me, that's what I did through several situations that were so severe and so difficult psychologically to deal with that I split into a number of personalities that were more limited, but they were created as a group together and have always acted as a group.
Okay. And run me through some of the names.
Okay. Well, there's Stone Boy and another boy named TT. There's five personalities who are called the Angels of Death. We have one called Baby Doll, another called The Harbinger, one called Patience, Phoenix, Aurora Moon. We love that name. The Controller, Old Self, The Me's, which are three different personalities, Meek, Misfit, Black Widow, the Blue Ones, which is a group of 13 personalities, the Time Traveler, the Source, one called Tear, Miss Angry, Voice Mercury.
And I noticed one of them had boy in the name. Are some of your personalities male?
Yeah, we have quite a few males inside.
And so why some male personalities?
That's a good question. I think sometimes the reasons personalities are created, and they might be created as the opposite gender, or they might be created as older or younger than the child really is, because the child, and certainly in my own experience, but I think in other multiples' experience, the child beliefs say that a boy can handle the abuse better than a girl could. Or maybe if I'm a boy, then I won't get hurt as much. Or maybe I'll be tougher. Or maybe I won't cry as much if I'm a boy. Or if I create a personality who's an adult, then maybe that adult can deal with whatever's going on instead of me being a child. So the same kind of thing.
How does one of your male personalities feel when you say wear a dress?
Well, they, at this point, because we've gone through so many years of healing and therapy, usually they just roll their eyes and go, okay, whatever. They pretty much accept it now. We just learn to make compromises and stuff because we are, you know, we do have a female body. So they accept that, yes, we're going to present in the world as a female and we're going to dress sometimes as a female.
And I understand you have a lot of teenage personalities, and you alluded to the different ages. Why so many teenage personalities?
Well, partly because I went through a lot of abuse in my adolescence, and so I created, well, actually we created a lot of teenagers because that's the age we were in order to deal with the abuse.
I see. And is there a dominant personality?
There are several personalities who sort of tend to be more active than the other personalities, but they don't really take charge. We've managed to be pretty democratic in how we make decisions about things. I mean, we weren't always that way. It used to be that there were certain personalities that we called the elders, and they made the major decisions for our life and what we would do and how we would handle things. But as our healing and therapy went on, we became more democratic and said, hey, you know, we should all have a say in what goes on, you know, especially if we're mature enough to understand things.
And what personality am I talking with now?
Well, my name is Shell, and I tend to be the person who sort of speaks for everybody else and that. But sometimes we'll switch in a second and switch back. So that, you know, maybe if I make a joke inside, we might say, oh, that was Ariel making a joke. And then she'd pop back in, and so it would be me, it's Shell again.
I see. And now, in the popular perception, voices change.
Right.
And talk a little bit about that and whether that's myth or reality.
Well, the whole thing is that many people believe that somebody who's multiple, you should be able to see it right away. So the person's voice is going to change, you know, their whole body language would change and stuff like that. But that's not necessarily true. There's a psychiatrist in the States, Dr. Richard Kluft, who wrote about it and said, really, it's only about 94% or about 6% of multiples who are that obvious about changing from one personality to another. And the rest of multiples are actually trying to hide their multiplexity because they don't want people to know that this is what they're doing, and they don't want people to know that the reason for this is because of abuse and trauma that's going on in their life. So they really try to hide it. So they try to pass as the same person and try to make people believe, oh, you know, I'm not multiple. I'm just like you, you know. I'm just one person.
Well, in fact, you substitute pronouns, right?
Yes.
If you're not out speaking as Shell,
yes,
right, and discussing it,
yes,
you feel it's natural for you to say we or ourselves.
It is, but because it's a whole group of personalities that's inside this mind and this body. So we are a collective we. And so it feels awkward to say I unless I'm specifically referring to just me as Shell.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. But yet to sort of pass,
yes,
you will use I
exactly.
And me.
Exactly, yeah, because people would say, why are you saying we? You know, they wouldn't know and would wonder why. So to pretend that I'm normal, I just use I.
Does it ever just slip out and people look at you in a strange way?
Well, I think it's probably slipped out, and maybe people have just thought, oh, I guess she's referring to the royal we or something. I don't know. Nobody's ever questioned me about it, so.
Right. Now, I understand, speaking of we, so you'll
yes.
have conversations with
yes.
yourself. And
yeah.
Are you ever, will you ever talk out loud when you're having these conversations?
When we're at home alone, yeah, we talk out loud quite often. But sometimes even when we're walking down the street, you know, we don't talk really loud, but we might kind of mutter to each other, or somebody might pop out and make some comment about something, but we're pretty quiet. And every once in a while, somebody will say, hey, you're talking out loud, you know, to remind us that be quiet, you know, but...
Is that a particular personality that gives the warning?
No, usually it's just somebody inside going, you know, somebody who notices that we're talking out loud and doesn't want anybody to notice, but
right.
no one in particular.
You just need to get one of the cell phone headsets, right?
Yes,
and
exactly.
No one will look
at
you.
Nobody'd know.
That's right. So now, do you have any inside jokes with your personalities?
Well, I'm sure we do. I can't think of any right now, but there have been times where we do, you know, have some problem that's going on or some issue that's going on, and then something funny will happen, and nobody else would get it, or nobody else could really relate, but we can because we're sharing the same body and mind. So in a sense, we're sharing the same experiences. So, of course, some things are going to strike us funny that are not going to be funny to anybody else.
And do some of your personalities dislike other personalities?
I think that there's, many who don't really like this one or that one. But we've really learned to get along with each other and kind of bear with each other. And partly through the psychiatrist we worked with for 17 years, really helped us to acknowledge particularly the most disagreeable personalities inside, the ones that were the most difficult, and she really helped us be patient with them and really listen to them. So we've learned to get along.
And is there one that's more assertive than others?
There's a few of us that are. I can't think of one in particular, but there's a few of us that can be a bit outspoken sometimes.
When did you become aware of that you had multiple personality disorder?
Back in 1990, I was going to school full-time, and I think the stress of school, and I was raising a son on my own, and I just ended up falling apart and then ending up in hospital and then discovered that there were these different personalities inside and started hearing the voices clearly inside saying, by the way, I'm here and my name is Razor Man or my name is Ariel.
And we're back with Kyaire talking about dissociative identity disorder. So I'm wondering, I understand you take antidepressants.
Yes.
And do you have different reactions to medications with your different personalities?
Yeah, we do, actually. There was a period of time where just some of us were experiencing psychotic type of thinking, and so we took an antipsychotic, and only some of us could feel the effects of the antipsychotic, and others of us didn't feel it at all. So it's almost like we can kind of put a wall up between us so that the medication only goes to the personality or the personalities that need it.
Yeah, I understand. In fact, one time you took 20 pills a day, but it was, you explain what
right.
happened when you
well,
were taking.
We got addicted to a tranquilizer, what's called a benzodiazepine called Ativan, and we got very addicted to it, and we were taking 20 to 30 pills a day for months and months and months, and the maximum we were supposed to take was 4. But when our psychiatrist finally realized what was going on, she said, okay, you got to taper off. She gave us a month to taper off. And apparently with benzodiazepines, it should take longer to taper off, especially with that high a dose. But I guess she felt we could do it. And sure enough, we did. And we've heard so many horror stories of people coming off of benzodiazepines having a million and one different side effects that are quite severe and go on for months and sometimes a very long time. We had a few days of nightmares, and that was it. That was all the side effects we had. And we figured out it must be because we're multiple and because different ones of us were taking. So maybe one personality was taking 2 pills a day, another personality maybe 4. But it was possible, and we didn't really sort of write it down or record anything to figure out who was taking what. But we figured that's what had happened, is that the pills kind of got spread around a number of personalities. So no one of us got that highly addicted. So it wasn't that difficult to come off of the Ativan eventually.
Amazing. And are there some people you like when you're one personality and you dislike when you're another personality?
Yeah. We've had relationships or, been with a person and somebody inside will say, God, I can't stand this person. Tell me we're not going to hang out with them, And somebody else will say, well, I really like this about that person. But, we'll usually go away and talk about it and try to figure out, okay, is this somebody we want to be with? And is this a legitimate reason to not be with this person? Or can that personality just bear with us? Or maybe just kind of, as Chris and Dana were talking about, just dissociate and just kind of remove themselves from the situation while we are, spending time with that person.
And what determines the appearance of a personality?
I think it's mostly by choice of the personality themselves, except for the really young ones, because we have personalities who were babies and some who are still they were babies, so they don't make a choice as to how they look. But the older ones have made choices. So one personality will say, I'm going to have short blonde hair. And we have one personality, Black Widow, who's always seen herself as overweight, and another personality who's struggled with an eating disorder and restricted how much she was eating because she felt she was overweight, and yet we have drawings of her where she was really thin and stuff. So yeah, it depends on how each of us want to see ourselves.
And what's most misunderstood about multiple personality disorder?
Well, kind of like I was talking about before, where Dr. Richard Kluft had said that that multiples, that people assume that it's really easy to see when a person's multiple. They'll see them changing and drastically changing, and, oh, you're this way one minute and you're that way the next minute. You must be multiple. And in fact, most multiples are not like that. They're actually trying to hide their multiplexity. And so they might have a whole bunch of personalities work together to pretend to just be one person and pass as one person so that other people just can't tell that they're multiple.
I see. And are there certain talents you have with certain personalities that you don't have with others?
We have some personalities who say really love to sing, and we have one personality who loves to harmonize, and we have other personalities who love writing, some who love drawing, and some of the artwork will change depending on who's drawing. So yeah, there's kind of different talents and different skills. We have one personality who does all the organizing and loves to organize all of our files and all of our computer files and all of the information about each of us.
And are there some that are up and when others are depressed?
Yes. Yeah. Some can be pretty much okay, even though some might feel really depressed. And that helps because it helps get us out of the depression.
Interesting. Yeah. So one will actually lift up the others.
Yeah, it doesn't always work. You know, sometimes the depression is bad enough that it kind of spreads to a lot of us and we can't fight it, but sometimes we can.
And what do you say to those who doubt that people can have multiple personalities?
Well, as far as sort of the general public, I don't really have a problem if people have a hard time believing it, because it is a very strange phenomenon and a strange way of being. And I think many people are kind of afraid of it because, well, you're really weird, you know. But I do have a hard time when professionals don't believe it. You know, if I'm going to see a therapist about it, I want that therapist to believe me and to take it as, this is my reality. And I don't want you to question my reality, unless I'm psychotic, of course, you know. But again, you know, if that professional really thinks, you know, I'm sorry, I can't buy into this, then I can't work with them.
And then last, what do you consider the gift of having multiple personality disorder?
Well, it is like being it's like having a family inside my head. And because when we learn to really support each other and get along with each other, it's quite profound, you know, quite profound.
And do you find that you're more empathetic and compassionate?
Definitely, yeah. I have a lot more compassion, particularly for people who've suffered trauma in their childhood.
Well, Kyaire, thanks for coming on Beautiful Minds Radio.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to Kyaire Weber talk about having dissociative identity disorder, and you're going to be listening to Autumny by Gerard Satamian. Thank you. you'll be listening to Color Commentary with Dr. Chris Gorman and Dana Gillis.
Hi, it's Dr. Chris Gorman and Dana Gillis back to do the color commentary on today's show, which was very interesting. I mean, multiple personality certainly raises a whole bunch of questions, and maybe for each personality, in fact. Dana, tell me what your thoughts are.
Well, I came away from listening to that interview thinking, well, this isn't Hollywood, you know. This is not how this particular condition is depicted in Hollywood with in movies like Carrie. Is completely different. Kai came across as quite grounded. And
yeah, absolutely. I was really impressed. I thought it was a really good description of the connection with dissociation and also the different personalities and the connection to trauma, the brain trying to protect you from what you've been through, so you can carry on.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is, you know, she made the point also herself during the interview that my experience with dissociation is different than her experience with multiple personalities. But it seems like it may be happening for the same reasons.
Yeah, I mean that you know, it everything is a little bit different in everybody, and we're looking for these, you know, what is actually in, you know, what do we have in common, and what are the differences? I thought we should also though talk a little bit today about the news, and because there was an important news thing that Joelle was talking about, and that's the marketing of Seroquel for conditions other than what the original studies were designed to explore. And this, I just wanted to make it clear, it doesn't mean that Seroquel is necessarily a dangerous drug or that you cannot take it for a condition that isn't schizophrenia, for example, which is what it was originally marketed for. It now has marketing approval for bipolar disorder and bipolar depression. But that the companies are held to a very high standard of not saying you can use Seroquel for post-traumatic stress disorder or an anxiety disorder if you have never done a study comparing that medication to a placebo. And I think that point is worth making. What were your thoughts, Dana?
Well, on hearing this story, and I cover the news pretty closely because I do the social media for the program, and I hadn't seen this story, and I take Seroquel because I have bipolar, and it's part of a small cocktail that I take, and I never liked the idea of being on an antipsychotic because I remember the old days of the old styles antipsychotics where I felt like my feet were in a bucket of cement. But when I took Seroquel, I felt, okay, this is a good compromise, I can deal with this. But whenever you hear this kind of story and it comes out of left field, you immediately feel vulnerable and at risk, and you wonder if perhaps the doctors who are prescribing the medication have your best interest in mind. And of course that's me being a little bit paranoid, but that in the moment was how I was feeling when I heard the story.
Well, you know, and it raises an important point. I mean, none of the medications that we prescribe in psychiatry are by any stretch of the by any measure completely safe medications. They are medications that can cause serious problems in the wrong patient, and that's even in patients where you have an indication for that medication. Let's say it's schizophrenia or bipolar disorder and you're taking Seroquel or quetiapine, that doesn't mean that it can't cause problems, and that's why there has to always be a healthy dialogue between the patient being informed and being listened to and respected for their experience with this particular medication, and the doctor or psychiatrist trying to accommodate as well as they can those concerns.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, I was first put on Seroquel when I had actually had a serious break with reality, and I was in the hospital, and they said, here, take these pills. And at the time, I really wasn't present to say no, and actually it turned out okay because in the end I actually was pulled out of, came out of that as a result of taking Seroquel, continue to take it today.
Which is really what the medications are for. I mean, they have to be less dangerous than the condition they're treating, and usually the distress that people are in. For example, Seroquel sometimes used for sleep. It doesn't have an indication for sleep, but if nothing else will help someone sleep, and you know how dangerous it is both physically and mentally for people to not sleep, a doctor could use it at obviously a much lower dose and help the patient. But again, that then becomes a discussion between the patient experiencing hopefully the benefit and not having the side effects.
Yeah, well, and again, it's trusting the doctors, and sometimes that's not always the easiest thing to do, but we have to reach out and meet the doctors halfway as patients, so far so good on this one. I am a little bit, I just want to make a quick comment about cognitive function in and suicidality in schizophrenia. That just seems counterintuitive to me.
Explain.
Well, it would seem to me that sense of self that would come with a higher cognitive function would indicate to me that they had a better grounding and more control over feelings like that. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, it's a very good point. I mean, is it that the condition when it's at its worst, to some extent, protective in terms of you not trying to hurt yourself, and that, sometimes the awareness of what's really going on to an extent increases the chance of somebody deciding to take their life. And I'm, again, not recommending it, just more understanding. I think the important thing whenever we talk about suicide is the importance of relationships. And you hope that someone with any one of these conditions has a relationship, at least with their doctor or psychiatrist, has a relationship with their friends or family or whatever. And those things are probably more important in terms of suicide than anything else.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really important point. And I know that coming out of these experiences, relationships have always been really important in the end.
Well, I love my relationship with you, and I love all our listeners, and I'm signing off for Color Commentary.
I love you too, Dr. Gorman.
I love you, Dana.
That was Dr. Chris Gorman and Dana Gillis talking about the segment topics on our show tonight. I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr., and you're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, Destigmatizing Mental Illness. Please visit our community events page for mental health-related events. Our website is www.beautifulmindsradio.org. Our team includes Brendan Beiser, Lori Collerman, Stephen Elliott, Dana Gillis, Dr. Chris Gorman, Dr. Patty Gorman, Will Martin, Joelle Holdrenay, Sarah Casamong, and myself, Richard J. Dalton, Jr. We'd like to thank Kyair Weber for her contribution to destigmatizing mental illness. And soon we're going to have on Tatiana Tomaselli talking about bipolar disorder.